You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.
Okay. Hare Krishna, everybody. Today, we are still in Sydney for a few more days. Then we'll go on Monday to the Gold Coast, Brisbane. So today we're very fortunate. I am Ganga Das, your host and podcast member for Radio Mayapur. And today we're very fortunate to have with us Sankirtan Narottam Das, disciple of His Divine, His Grace, Japataka Swami. Yesterday was his Vyasa Puja, which we celebrate here. And he was born in South India, Tanjore. In 1981, he studied engineering in electronic and communication. And he met the devotee in 1998 in Bangalore. Welcome.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Prabhu, it's a great pleasure to have a podcast with you. I know you for many years. You are a very bright devotee and a professional person who are very successful, both materially and spiritually. You have a nice son, you have a nice wife, and everything Krishna has given you is wonderful. So let me ask you, what was your life before you became a devotee? Tell us a little bit about your childhood or your family.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for having me in Radio Mayapur. Wonderful service. Radio Mayapur ki jai.
Jai.
So as I told you, I was born in Tanjore. It's a small town. Grew up in a very tight nuclear family. Had a lot of friends and relatives in a very small town. Was born in a bit, Smartha Brahmana background.
Oh, okay, nice.
So, born, brought up in a typical Brahmana family, had a typical pious upbringing.
Was a wonderful experience.
Very wonderful experience.
Yeah, nice. Had loving father and mother.
Very loving father, mother. Very loving group of, my father had a very big family. He had like 10 brothers and sisters. Whoa. My mom had 6 or 7 brothers and sisters. Most of them were in the same small town. So had a lot of cousins. I have a sister, as you know. And then grew up in a very big family. So a lot of people to go around, pious setting. South India was still more pious those days. So
yes.
I had a lot of temple trips. My grandfather had his own temple and things like that. So I was grown up in a very pious, very nice environment. And then after my year 10, we had to move to Chennai. Mm-hmm. So that's my first exposure to city. So I came to Chennai. I did my schooling year 11 and 12 in Chennai. Then I had a lot of friends, a lot of big groups and all of that. And then first year of my college, we went on an industrial trip to Bangalore.
Mm.
And that's when, as a group, a whole college was taken to ISKCON Temple, because ISKCON Temple had just opened a few years. It was very famous.
Beautiful, the hill.
And on the hill.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Banaji and beautiful deities.
Correct.
Nice.
So that's my first exposure. So just a quick little background about me.
Nice, beautiful. So tell us why at one point in your life you choose to become a devotee.
Very interesting. Because that trip when I had gone with our friends, there was always a little bit of difference between how Chennai was compared to where I came from.
Hmm.
Because I come from, a very pious, yeah. A lot of religious activities. Whereas Chennai was actually opposite. And once I went to college, it was entirely different, fully materialistic, going out with friends and, doing all kind of things and everything.
Experimenting.
So there's always a conflict in, when you do two things. So I was just thinking about this. And the day I went to ISKCON, I had a darshan. I sat in front of the deities. And then one of the brahmacharis called me and he said, are you interested in taking books? Then I said, I wanted to, not buy anything.
So this was in Chennai?
Bangalore.
In Bangalore.
When I had gone for the, industrial visit. So then I told him, no, I don't read English and all of that. He said, what language you know? I said, I speak only Tamil. Then he brought me a Tamil Bhagavad Gita and a Signs of Self-Realization in Tamil. And he said, I have Tamil books.
You're cut.
I didn't know what to do. So then I said, okay, I'll buy it. And then I bought it. And then he turned the book over. And then in the backside of Signs of Realization, they had all the list of all the temples. And then he showed me the Bucket Road T Nagar Temple in Chennai. He said that, you know, you go there, there is a Japanese sadhu there. You know, if you have any questions, you can ask him. That's all he said. And that's my first introduction. So then I came back to the hotel. For some reason, I was not feeling about going around with my friends. I started reading Science of Self-Realization. The book was so powerful that I finished the whole book in the next 1.5 days. I was reading all the way back in the train and back home. And, you know, that's my introduction.
You got glue. You got glue to the books.
Yeah.
Nice. And then how did you meet did you go to Chennai Temple?
Yes. Yeah. So this is very interesting. No, so I went into the Chennai Temple. This was few days before Rath Yatra. So all the devotees were very busy running around. And no, like when I went around in the evening around 4:30 time, nobody was there. So then I just went and somebody was there in the book table. I don't remember who. Then I asked this devotee, you know, is there a Japanese saint there? He said, yeah, he's in the first floor. So, I mean, nobody stopped me. I just walked to the first floor and knocked the door. And then he said, okay, yes. And then I entered and there was this, you know, a saint, like, you know, a saffron dust. I didn't recognize saffron. All of that was not, you know, registering to me.
Right.
Then I told him that, you know, I went to Bangalore. You know, I got a book and they told me to come here. And then, I mean, later I know it is His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj. And then he said, oh, very nice. We have a Rath Yatra. You can come for the Rath Yatra. And here our temple president, he was a temple president at that time. So the temple secretary is there. Go and meet him. So I came down and I met with Sumitra Prabhu.
Nice.
And then Sumitra Prabhu told me, you know, come for the Rath Yatra. There are a lot of services, you know, bring your friends from college and all of that. So that was my second experience.
You went to Rath Yatra.
Yes. That's another very interesting experience. So I went to Rath Yatra. There was a huge crowd. It was starting from T Nagar at that time. And there used to be a devotee, Gopal Kishore, who was a temple devotee at that time. So then he was just looking for people to do some services. So, you know, I went there and I was just standing, looking at things, you know, not knowing what to do, who to talk. And he said, you know, are you free? And I said, yes. So he said, I have something for you. Do you want to do it? I said, okay. Then he said, come. And then he took me inside the rath, below the rath. And then he said, this is a canopy service. There are two things you need to do. When there's a pull, you have to pull it. And then so it'll go up. And then when it comes down, I'll give you a glove. It'll come very fast. So you have to hold the rope so it doesn't like
smash.
I said, okay, how hard it can be. Then I realized then I realized that the canopy is like actually like hundreds of kilos. And then there were like around 8 of us pulling. And then, you know, like, you know, catching the rope. So he made me do the service for 6-7 hours. We had an amazing kirtan. Every 15 minutes, somebody will come and give a different kind of prasadam to feed us. It was a very energetic, you know, even though it was a physical service, I really enjoyed it because there was so much fun. So that caught my, you know, heart and attention. Yes.
And then how you proceed after that?
So after that, you know, then Gopal Prabhu took me to a few other devotees and they said there is a Bhakti Vriksha that happens in one of the devotees where I stay. I used to stay on the other side of the town called Annanagar. The temple was in T Nagar.
Yes, yes.
So they said there is a devotee there. She and her husband runs weekly classes and I can attend there. So then I went to their home and I started attending the evening classes. Every Saturday evening we used to have this 1.5 hours Bhakti Vriksha class, then big prasadam. One of the big highlights was Shubhanga Prabhu used to make an amazing kheer. So he used to, they had this Radha Giridhari deity at their home.
Yes.
And Prabhu's one of the services, he'll make a kheer. And so every week he'll keep that kheer for me. So that's one of the attractions to go there.
Prasadam is always very attractive.
Yeah. So then I started attending the Bhakti Vriksha. And that's when I started becoming a serious devotee. And then very early, within like 5-6 months of attending the class, Mataji actually told me about Mayapur. So she said, it's an amazing place. Radha Madhav is, you see them, you know, they'll blow your mind and this and that. So at that time, my father used to have something called LTE, travel allowance in his office. So every 4 years, the bank will reimburse whatever trip you take. So then I said, that year we'll go to Mayapur. Then my father said, it's a temple. What will we do there? I said, like, let's just go there and see. So then we flew to Calcutta, and then we took a taxi and we came to Mayapur. We didn't have booked anything, nothing there. So I went there and I asked for a room. They gave me in the long building.
Oh, okay.
With a common bathroom and everything. So then one of the things Mataji had told me is don't miss the Mangala Arati. So the previous day night, we had come very late, but still somehow or other, I woke up in the morning. The rest of my family were sleeping. I went to path and I entered the altar, you know, the temple room. And when that first darshan in Mangalati darshan of Radha Madhava, I'll never forget. Orange color dress for Radharani, yellow dhoti for Krishna, Madhava. I'll never forget that experience. It was an amazing experience. And then my parents came, they attended darshanarthi. And they were amazed, you know, like, and then we attended the whole program and everything. And then after lunch, my father was saying, okay, now we had darshan, what else? There's nothing else to do. You know, like I already booked like 6-7 days. What are we going to do here for 7 days? So then he said, I'll book a car. We'll go to Darjeeling and this and that. And there used to be a brahmachari, Vrajanath Prabhu.
He's
from South India.
Yeah,
somewhere or other, he got the news that some South Indian family has come. So he came to us and said, first of all, do you want a better room? We said, yes. So he took us to the conch building.
Nice.
Those days, getting room in conch was very easy.
Yeah,
and it was 500 rupees a night. So then we said, yes. So he moved us to conch building. And then he said, one of the services I do is I take whoever come from South India, take around them. Are you interested? We said, yes. He said, okay, I'll make the arrangements. And then the next 5 days, he took us to six days to all the eight other islands. And he told all the stories. One of the things that actually inspired my parents very much was we went to this place called Modrumadweep. And there is a devotee of, there is a temple of Radha Madana Mohan, Vasudev Datta's deities. Yes. There used to be a very old devotee called Jagat Bandhu Prabhu. And he served us with so much love, the prasadam. My parents were in tears and they were so moved. They started practicing Krishna consciousness. My sister became a serious devotee. That's how my family became like strong in their Krishna conscious. So one of the very turning points for me was I got Prabhupada Lila Amrita from, you know, Vrajanath Prabhu. He said, buy that book and read it. So again, when I started reading it, it was so much energetic. So I read the whole book, but there is also a sad turning to it. So then I read the whole book. I was super enthusiastic reading Prabhupada. So then I came running to the temple, Chennai temple back, and I went back to the backside. There was a brahmachari ashram. I went, brahmacharis were eating, and I asked the brahmacharis, because there were so many inspiring characters in the book. So I asked, where is Brahmananda Prabhu? Where is Achyudananda Prabhu? Because they were prominent in these. And then he looked at me and said, they are not there. They are no more in ISKCON. I was like, what? And then, yes, they've all left. I was like, what is this? Then I asked so many other names and, you know, I couldn't connect to any of them. You know, because I only knew Bhanu Maharaj. I knew our Guru Maharaj, Epita Maharaj, and I knew Bhaktivika Swami because he used to travel as well. His holiness Bhaktivika. So their names were not there prominently in Prabhupada Lila Amrita. They were, you know. So then, you know, I was thinking, you know, what happened? You know, like in all the prominent, you know. Then I started feeling really let down. You know, I thought if these stalwarts who associate with Prabhupada couldn't do it, why should I do it? Because I was also feeling pressure from my friend circle and all of them were saying, you know, this is not the age to do all of this. You know, you know, you used to go around.
I'm old.
Said, you know, you don't come with us to restaurant to eat onion, garlic and all of this. This is all, you know, take it slow. I was thinking maybe I should slow down. but then, you know, within the few weeks, then I also met my mentor from Bangalore. He used to come to our...
What's his name? His
Grace Chaitanya Avatari Prabhu. And then he took me under his wing and he said, don't be fanatic about Krishna consciousness. Take it slow, steady.
Correct.
You know, you don't have to be a tilaka and go to college and, you know. You have to show off. Just be normal in college. Yeah. And take Krishna consciousness slowly from the side. Take it. It's an internal process. So then he started guiding me. And then he said, your college studies are important. Don't think that, you know, you'll give up everything and become a brahmachari. These are all, from what I see, may not be for you.
Yeah. So, he was a very mature person. But let me ask you, go back in time. When you were with your family in Tanjore, did you ever study Shastra like Bhagavad Gita or Purusha Sutta, Vishnu Sahasranama?
Vishnu Sahasranama, yes.
Okay. This is something that they do every day, sing Vishnu Sahasranama. And they perform also different activities.
Yes.
Which I don't know if they explain to you or not, but just a culture.
Correct. Because we have to do Sandhya Vandana every day.
Right.
I was given Upanayana when I was in year six. I was given Upanayana. And I used to do religiously Sandhya Vandana like 3 times a day. So that was...
Explain what is Sandhya Vandana for our
audience. Sandhya Vandana is the... Basically, it's a process of chanting the Gayatri.
Okay.
But just you cannot chant the Gayatri because there are so many mantras to purify before the Gayatri and so many mantras after. So it is... The whole process is called Sandhya Vandana. It's done 3 times a day. It's a very Vedic process. You would see that it's prescribed in all the Vedic literatures, Mahabharata, you would see, even the Kshatriyas used to do Sandhya Vandana, they used to even do Agnihotra, but Sandhya Vandana is a smaller part, one aspect of...
How much time it takes you to do Sandhya Vandana, one time?
10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
I mean, if you're really fast.
Yeah. The first, otherwise it takes 20 minutes, half an hour.
20 minutes to half an hour, you know, if you want to do. So that's basically what I, that's our aspect
but
of.
But did you know the meaning of the mantra?
No.
What?
Not even one mantra I knew the meaning.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did I explain?
It's become a more ritualistic in the Smartha family, you know. Even, you know, that the other day I was telling the devotee, even the priest who learned the mantras in the early years, they learn only the mantras. Right?
They don't know the meaning.
Most of them know. I mean, they learn it over a period of time. But then that's not taught in the Gurukul as a, you know, as a subject or along with the mantras. The emphasis is on the mantra, pronunciation, meter and all of that.
Memory.
And correct. It was more ritualistic, you know, the rather...
But would you say that there is some benefit in chanting this mantra, even if you don't know anything? Yeah,
definitely.
I'm asking your personal experience.
Yeah, I would say that at least it kept me on a sattvic platform.
Okay.
Right? And it didn't help me not to go into those things if I would have normally... Because, you know, that time, this friend circle that I had a lot of influence on me.
Naturally.
And then, you know, so... To start drinking and eating meat is very common among Brahmana boys.
No.
But then for me, somehow or other, I was like, you know, had that aversion from, you know, those things. Maybe because I did Sandhya Vandana, it kept me on this planet. I mean, that's how I relate to it.
Right.
Yeah, that's my personal, you know.
No, because it's very interesting because like Maharaj was telling this morning in the class, if you chant any mantra, if you chant the Maha mantra, even though you don't know the meaning, even though you're casually or jokingly calling somebody, hey Krishna, oh Narayan, or this or that, that has effect of purifying your consciousness or at least removing all your sinful activity. So that's very nice because, you know, I met a lot of the world who are coming from the same background like you. And I asked a similar question. Did you learn the mantra? No. I learned the mantra, but I don't know the meaning. It's like a little bit like a parrot to me.
Correct. Yeah, know? Very true. Very true. I mean, my family, like, you know, like most of them are like that, you know, like, you know, like I, as far as I can think, I know very few people that I can count in fingers who actually know a little bit of the mantra meaning, not deep philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody learned philosophy or, you know, because there was, in you know, with all its good smartha, sattvic platform, there is also a side to the smartas where they don't want you to go deep into philosophy.
Why?
Because they think that that will push you away from family life.
Oh.
There is always that scare that you will leave the family and go
sannyasi.
And then you'll... So there is always a lot of fear. And so they actually actively discourage, in my generation, somebody from reading philosophy. Ooh. That's why in the Gurukul as well, they'll go to the meaning, but they'll not go to the philosophy at all because they want everybody to become a grahastha. They don't want any, you know, they are very particular about the going to the grahastha. You know, the family line is very important so that they can do all the rituals. So, because without family, son, you cannot do the shraddha. So that mood is so deeply ingrained in the smarthas. They actually actively discourage, you know, not actively, subtly they discourage you from learning the philosophy. Like I remember, you know, when I started reading philosophy and discussing, my uncle covered, "Yenda unaki idella?" Meaning, why all of this?
Learning all this philosophy. This is not the time when you're a 90-year-old. That time. But let me ask you another question. How many sannyasi are there in your sampradaya, or let's say, the followers of...
Okay, so the only sannyasis that we were linked to was the Kanchi Math.
K- Kanchi Shankaracharya.
Kanchi Shankaracharya. So yeah. He was our only link actually. Otherwise,
there is no other.
There is no, at least
in your place in Tanjavur, there was no other sannyasi doing puja.
To connect through Smartha line, like you know, the real in the one who are in parampara.
Yeah,
they only connect to the Kanchi mat, and very dishearteningly, when the Paramacharya left and the other two took over, and when they went to the jail, and you know, it became a big issue. You know that.
I don't remember, but
it actually broke the, like, you know, lot of faith in lot of Smartha families, right? Because that mutt was holding everything together, and when that mutt had issues, then it kind of had a lot of impact on, you know, like I remember that this was happened when I was in college already.
Why they went to jail? I don't remember.
There was some political issue. There was a murder and they were linked to the murder.
But of their own guru? No.
No. Somebody.
This is after he passed away.
Yeah, after he passed away. The next guru actually.
Because I met Shankaracharya when we met the Didi of Rishingadev.
Oh, okay. He was actually very pure.
He was very nice.
His next generation became an issue. I mean, it was a political move by the party, but then, you know, there was, anyway, whatever was the reason, it had a lot of profound impact on the faith that the Smartha families had, at least I can say.
How can somebody be accused of murder if he's a sannyasi? So correct. This is very strange.
Very strange. So, the only connection we had with was him, and you know, when the guru you met, Paramacharya was there.
I met all three of them because we were all living together.
So the oldest one, you know, my grandfather was directly connected to him. He had a direct access. He would take instruction directly from him. Very interestingly, that was my mother's father.
Oh.
Okay. They were a very rich family. My mother's father, he had like 4 schools, printing press, brick factory. He was very rich. But my father's family was extremely poor. But all of them had connection to Kanchi Mart. So any festival that we do, anything that we print, like as an invitation, they put his name, and on his behalf, we'll invite and all of that.
Okay. So now, basically, when you come back to Krishna consciousness, you start to understand why you were doing this ritual.
Correct.
Why the deepness, the culture, the method, the techniques, and the knowledge you get. Because in nowhere else, you never read the Bhagavad Gita, and you never read the Upanishad, you only chant Vishnu Sahasranam. That too is just the name of the Lord, which are very beautiful. No, nice. So then, what time you decide to take initiation? Because you know, you went through somebody teach you to chant Hare Krishna and follow a regular principle and blah blah blah.
So this
read the Bhagavad Gita, and then every Saturday you had a program. So you learned a lot through this Bhakti Viriksha program.
And I used to regularly attend His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj classes.
Oh, on Sunday or every day?
Sundays. Sometimes we'll go on a weekday, Bhagavatam class. Nice.
At that time there was no internet.
Yet. No internet. Even if there are cassettes, his classes were recorded in cassettes.
In cassettes. Yeah.
You know, we'll have a tape recorder, we'll keep next to him. We'll
Walkman.
Record. Walkman, correct. That's how we used to record his classes. And then we used to listen to his classes. We learned a lot from there. And then what happened was, when I finished my engineering, I started a small business.
Okay, good.
And then it was going well, then it started going down, and there was issues, and I was struggling with both my Krishna consciousness and my business.
This is in Chennai. Okay.
So at that time, I remember my mentor said, why don't you get a job and come to Bangalore? Because he was based in Bangalore.
Right.
So he said, why don't you come and stay with me for some time and see how it works for you? Then I said, okay, Prabhu.
That was a nice offer.
Yes. So then I shut down my business, and I actually immediately got a job. And then I decided I'll go to Mayapur for like 1 month, and then I go to Bangalore. So I went to Mayapur. I stayed there 1 month during non-festival time.
Mm.
And morning to evening, I'll be in front of Radha Mother. Amazing experience.
Which year?
This was in 2004.
Oh,
after, you know, Panchatattva have come. Yes. So then 1 month I stayed in Mayapur. Every day I chanted like many, many rounds in front of Radha Madhav, and you know, stayed. Yes. It was an amazing experience. Then I came to Bangalore. So in Bangalore, Chaitanya Prabhu had set up a small brahmachari ashram for working brahmacharis. All of us were working.
Right.
But we had a tight program, Mangalarti, you know, we'll cook for ourselves, clean, then we will chant our rounds, go to office, come back. Evening, we'll have one half an hour class and then we'll have like...
What's a nice program?
Very nice program. And then weekends were filled with preaching. Like morning to evening, we'll go to different places, give classes and things like that. It was very tight. So my sadhana was very good. Like, you know, it was roaring and like... so a few months I was there, 6 months I was there. And then, you know, again, this event happened where they transferred me from Bangalore to Chennai.
Oh, okay. Your job?
Job.
Well, you were working as what?
Working as a pro developer in Infosys.
Infosys, very famous computer
company. So then I said, okay. And then I came to Chennai. Now that us, you know, coming from Brahmachari Ashram back to home gives you a lot of luxury, you know.
Of course.
Somebody to cook, wash and everything. Yeah, and I became very relaxed. And like, you know, my sadhana went down completely.
You know, down.
From 16, I went to zero. Someday I'll do 16. Someday 0, 2 and all of that. And my office schedule also became very crazy.
Really?
So then, you know, it became so crazy. I would work until night 12, something like that. One day I was working very late. And I... saw that in, you know, in my office, they had this Yahoo Messenger those days where I was logged in. And then I saw that one day Guru Maharaj was online. Okay. It was night 11:30. So then I typed Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I was just like, you know, let's try, you know. Yeah. Immediately reply clip, Hare Krishna. Then he asked me, you're asking me Gurudev, are you my disciple? And I said, no, Guru Maharaj, I'm aspiring from you. Because I had already met him a few times and through my mentor, I had connected to him. So I had that connection. So I was aspiring from Guru Maharaj. So then he said, the next question he asked me is, how many rounds are you chanting? Then I said, Guru Maharaj, some days I do 16, some days I don't do anything. And just like he said, first rule is whatever you do, do it constantly. Start with 2, 4, it doesn't matter, but do that constantly. And I said, okay, Guru Maharaj. And he said, if it help you, I think you should go back to Bangalore because I see the influence on Chaitanya Avatari is very good on you. Maybe he would inspire you to do better. You should try to go back to Bangalore. I said, okay, Guru Maharaj. And then I said, Guru Maharaj, please bless me so that I'll go back home, back to garden. And then Guru Maharaj replied, by Gauranga's mercy, I'll take you back home, back to garden.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And then I said, okay. Then again, you know, I tried for a job and within a week, I got a job in Bangalore.
Fantastic. It's
a company.
In another company.
Yeah, it's an American company called Fidelity Investments.
Okay.
So then I moved to Bangalore and then there I was under Prabhu. I was, you know, this thing. But you know, one thing that I was always struggling with is taking initiation because it's a very serious commitment.
Yeah, of course.
And given my background in going up and down in Krishna consciousness, I was not sure. So there were 2-3 times my Prabhu said, my mentor said, and you know, take initiation. I said, no, I was backing off. Then I was thinking, I went to Mayapur again for the Parikram, Navadvip Mandal Parikram. And then we came to Rajapur. And I remember in Rajapur, Guru Maharaj was telling Leelas, Janivas Prabhu was telling so many Leelas about Rajapur Jagannath. Yeah, he was saying all the stories. Then I went to Rajapur Jagannath and I told him all these stories I'm hearing, it's all amazing. So, I mean, let me see, are you really powerful? I actually challenged the Lord. I said, you're really powerful. You should make me take initiation. Okay. I prayed this and I came out. And then I, 1 year after exactly, we went for Guru Maharaj's Vyasa Puja, 60th Vyasa Puja. So we came to Sridham Mayapur. Everything was there. Festival was there. Suddenly, the day before Vyas Puja, my mentor had called me and said, you're taking initiation tomorrow. I said, what? Because that year, the festival committee, Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj and others have made a rule that no initiation, because managing Vyasa Puja and initiation is too much. They said no initiation ceremony and Guru Maharaj agreed for it. I said, Prabhu, there is no initiation. You don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So he had told something to Guru Maharaj and Guru Maharaj said, you know, we don't want to give trouble to people this. So without anybody knowing, arrange for initiation in Rajapur. Okay. So I wrote the question paper the previous day, 11:30. I finished the paper. 1 o'clock, I had an interview with Ratnavali Mataji was JPS office. 1:30, Guru Maharaj interviewed me. And they chose a name like 2230. And the next day, my initiation happened in front of Rajapur Jagannath. I prayed to him, and 1 year after, exactly my initiation happened in front of Rajapur Jagannath.
Jagannath is powerful.
Very powerful.
Be careful what you desire. Be careful what you ask. You will get it.
Yes. Yeah. So that is my initiation story.
Beautiful. It has happened in Rajapur. But then how you end up here in Australia, that's another story.
So yeah,
were working, you were not married at the time.
No, I was not married. So
which
then,
year you got married?
2010. So this, my initiation was in 2006. And then 2007, I had to travel to US for my work. A couple of years, 3 years, I lived in Boston. Then I came back, and in 2010, I got married.
But what was your life as a devotee, as working in Boston, in America? How was it?
Yeah, it was...
There are temples there, small temples.
I lived not in Boston, a small town outside of Boston called Marlboro. It's like 40 kilometers.
Marlboro is a cigarette, a famous cowboy who smoked the cigarette
That's in UK, so they named the same...
The same like, thing in America.
Because they call this place New England.
Okay.
Because that's where the first British people landed, So anyway, but because I was already an initiated devotee, because I'll tell you one thing, if I had not been initiated, US would have changed me.
Yeah.
Because it's so much freedom,
so much Maya.
Maya is there. So,
you can cut it with a knife.
Yeah. But because I was initiated, and then 2006, I went there. And what I did is I wanted to do something Krishna consciousness. So what I did is, like, there were around 15 colleagues with me, and I was trained a little bit. Indians who came with me to US. So because I was back in, in Brahmacharya Ashram, I'll cook for the devotees, I'll run classes, those are the two services I do. So then I told all the boys who were colleagues, they were all single, none of them knew cooking. So I said, I'll cook at home at my place and they can come and have prasadam. So every day, morning, breakfast, dinner, I'll cook for them, offer it and give them prasadam.
You become the chef.
And then I'll, sometimes I inspired them to go, come with me to Boston Temple. We went to the new Vrindavan Temple. And then all of this I was doing. And then almost at the end of 2008 is when I heard the news, Guru Maharaj got a stroke. Then 2009, I was just contemplating whether to be there, not to be there. And then, so I decided to come back to India. So beginning of 2009, I came back to India. So in US, because the work was really tight as well, and I love traveling, so I traveled to a lot of temples, I went to a lot of places, Disney, everything we went.
Yeah, of course.
But, Guru Maharaj's mercy, Prabhupada's mercy, I was able to do my rounds and,
maintain the standards.
To whatever extent I could.
So, but how you find the difference between living in America and living in Australia, for example?
Yeah.
So I have a different thing I want to check with you.
Yeah, okay. So from US, then I came to India, got married, and then moved to Singapore for 2 years.
Okay.
And then Singapore is where my son was born.
Oh.
And Singapore, we had a horrible work culture. It's one of the best cities to live, one of the worst places to work.
Why?
Because, this is my perception, maybe I'm wrong. The Asian people there, they work for like 12 hours every day. Even if they don't have work, they sit in office for more than 10, 11 hours. Like, because they don't cook at home, they eat outside and things like that. So for them, office work is very important. And so they spend a lot of time in that. And then with this newborn baby, we were struggling as a young family. And then my sister was living here in Australia. She said, Australia is a better place. Work-life culture is better. Why don't you try here? So I applied for a PR and I got it. So I'll tell you, the first month when I came to Australia was a culture shock to me.
Of course.
Because I've lived in US, I've lived in India and in Singapore.
There is no people here.
Yeah, there's no...
First, nobody.
Yeah. And then...
It's empty.
Everything closes down at 4:30. I was like, what is this? It's a bit depressing, Everything shuts down at 4:30. There's nothing, So it's very difficult the first few months. And then everything was ridiculously priced in Australia. It was a bit costly. Because US is much cheaper.
Yeah.
Singapore... The car and the housing is costly, but everything else, food and, other things are very cheap. So this was like both, it was very, bit of a culture shock. But then we adjusted and I got a job, nice job. And luckily, my boss was a devotee.
Wow.
If I tell about my interview, you'll be amazed.
Tell us.
Okay. So this is how I got a job. I was searching for a job. I moved to Australia. 2 months, I was searching for a job. I didn't get a job. And I used to live in this house where we are doing the interview right now with my sister. And you know how far the temple is away.
Yeah.
So those days the metro was not there. So I have to take a bus to a train in Blacktown, from Blacktown a train to North Sydney, a bus to the, you know, temple.
It takes you 1 hour or plus.
1.5 hours.
Yeah.
So I used to go and do Rajbhog for Radha Gopinath. So one day I was...
Every day?
No, 2 days a week.
Oh, 2 days
a week. Because weekdays they didn't have... Weekends they had a lot of devotees. Right, weekdays they had less. So I used to go to... So it was a Wednesday, I was going and cooking. And I had a very close devotee friend, Govinda Hari. Maybe you should interview him. He's very interesting. So he called me and said, Narottam, send me your resume immediately. I'm trying to get an interview for you tomorrow. I said, Prabhu, I'm cooking Rajbhog. I can't move now. There are no other devotees in the temple to hand it over to. Who will cook Rajbhog? He said, are you not interested in a job? I said, I am really interested in a job, but I can't leave halfway through. The best I can do is by the time I reach home, it'll be 3 o'clock. He said, okay, do your best. He was very upset. Then I finished cooking, offered it to Radha Gopinath, and then took prasadam, and then I came home at 3, sent him my resume, and he somehow or other got the interview organized the next day. So I went to the
interview.
It's in a bank, Westpac. So I enter there, and he already told me your manager is going to be a devotee. And I've never met that devotee. His name was Raja. So this devotee comes, and I've never seen him. And he says, okay, let's go for an interview. He went into a room. We were talking, and he said, you know, I'm not the interviewer, actually. My boss is going to hire you. You will work for me, but he's the deciding authority. So then his boss walks in. He's a Macedonian, I've told you.
Yeah.
Amazing guy. So he walks into my room, and the first question he asked me is, do you know Raja, who's the devotee? And I didn't know what to say, whether yes or no.
Yes, it could be a different...
Yeah, you know, I don't know how Australia works. And then before I could answer, Raja Prabhu said, yes, I know him very well. You know, we go back and, you know. Then he said, I have two roles. One is a technical role. One is a business role. Which would you prefer? I thought, okay, based on that, the questions will come. So I said, I'm more business oriented. You know, I moved away from technical side. And he said, okay, join from next Monday. That's it. The only question I had is, do you know Raja?
Because he trusted him.
Yes.
He knows that if he hires you, then you don't work with him.
Correct. And so he was a devotee. So we had an amazing time. I don't know whether I can tell this in the radio,
sure,
but then, you know, we had a fun time. I'll, you know, some days, like, what we'll do is we'll put a one-on-one meeting between ourselves. We'll go to the temple, see the Rajbhog, Arati, Prasadam, and then come back. Everybody in the office will think these guys are having a meeting, but we'll see. But the first few years, Australia was very good in the sense my work-life balance was extremely good. I had a lot of time for preaching, a lot of time for my sadhana, and a lot of time for seva. So
bless that your family.
Yes. And, you know, like, spend a lot of time with my family. So that way, Australia is amazing. It's even better than US in that way.
Definitely. Yes.
In the sense, work, US, you have to work at least 8 hours. Australia, 6 hours, you're done. You know, the rest of the time is for you to spend. So that way, I feel very Australia flexible. Yeah. But there are certain advantages living in US. You know, the country is so big, there's so many things to do, so many things to see,
yeah.
Variety, there is a less cost and all of that. But yeah, Australia has its lot of advantages as well. Over a period of time, I've started enjoying Australia.
Wonderful. Tell us how you get married, because I'm sure your marriage was an arranged marriage.
Yes.
It was not a love marriage. You didn't meet your wife somewhere in the temple and say, oh, I like this girl, I want to get married with her. No, tell us the story how you get married.
So we were trying to get a devotee wife for a long time, almost like two and a half years. So then we thought, okay, we have tried two and a half years, nothing worked out, you know, we tried and nothing worked out. So then my parents were in anxiety, you know, like, you know, you're not getting married, you know, why don't you allow a little bit wider circle? So then again, my mentor said, okay, that's not a wrong thing. You can get a good, nice Brahmana girl, maybe, but just be clear, explain to her what you're doing. You know, don't surprise her that, you know, you get married and she comes and sees you doing and then she thinks you are crazy and all of that.
Right.
Be very clear to her in the beginning. Now, so then that's how we met, and this, you know, this
was
alliance.
An arrange, was
yeah,
it
it's true. An arranged marriage.
Somebody.
Within the family. Her cousin's husband is my father's second cousin, son, you know, like
something.
So that the alliance came, the parents talked, so I, you know, like, we went to meet
her.
The chart. It matched, yes.
Beautiful.
Then we went to, I went to meet her.
You
I
saw
said,
the photograph before?
Yes.
What, she was beautiful.
Yes.
No problem.
No problem. So I went to meet her again, you know, like I went to meet her, there were like 40 people sitting in the room, you know, traditional, they made this, you know, in South India. They make a halwa and this and that and I was serving. Like, I was, what
you
is happening?
Say anything, yeah?
Yeah, I couldn't say anything. Then I said, I want to talk to the girl. And they say, talk in front of us. And then somebody had sense to send us to a separate room and talk. Yeah. And then I went to her and explained to her about all Krishna consciousness. And she's like, she's from a very traditional, small village Brahmana family.
Smartha also.
So, and they follow this. There's a Krishna Premi group in South India. They also do bhajans, kirtan. In a bit Smartha way, but they do bhajans. Lot of bhajans, kirtan, Harinam, Sankirtan, all of that.
Nice.
So she also had exposure to Mahaprabhu. She knew about Mahaprabhu.
Kirtan
and all that. It's just that they are not like, you know, in a very Smartha way, they do things.
Okay.
So then she said, this is all I know. You know, like, this is not normal. But I was really not. Are you sure you're okay with not eating onion, garlic? And the bigger than onion, garlic with the Smartha family is coffee.
Oh, not coffee.
Yeah. But, I mean, I didn't tell about coffee to her at that time.
It's okay.
You know, I said like, you know, only onion, garlic. I said nothing. The coffee tea, I didn't touch at all.
Uh-huh.
Then I talked about, you know, this, that, and, you know, ISKCON. I follow this. And she said, okay, it's all fine with me. It's all normal with me.
She loves you at first sight. You are a handsome person. I know.
So then I wasn't sure. And she comes from a very traditional family where meeting before marriage itself was considered
taboo.
But then, you know, then they expected me to reply immediately. But I said, no, I have to talk with my mentor, you know, with my family before I decide. That is generally taken as a kind of rejection you're backing off. So then, my mentor asked, as far as you're comfortable, you know, you have explained everything to her, go ahead. Then I thought, okay, this point did I say? So then I called her father and said, you know, can I talk to her again?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what happened. Later I came to know that her father scolded her saying, why did you not answer properly? He wants to talk to you again. What did you do? And this, so then when I picked the phone and I started talking to her, she started shouting at me saying, what is your problem with me? She started asking, what is your problem with
me? You don't like me.
So I said, no. I just wanted to make sure. I told you yesterday. Whatever you say, I'll follow. Who are you? What other question? I said, okay. I'll say okay. So, yeah, that one time I met her, within 15 days, we had an engagement, 1.5 months marriage finished.
Fantastic. Where do you got married?
In Chennai.
Which place?
Kalyan Mandam in Velachery.
And
His Holiness Vrajendra Dandan Maharaj, Malaysia Maharaj.
He
presided over our marriage.
Nice.
We had a big kirtan in the evening and, you know.
So now tell me about this program you're doing, because you're new in now you're doing Bhakti Vriksha. How many people under you work? How many people you're training? What is the future of this project?
So, Bhakti Vriksha, again, I got introduced when I was in Bangalore. We do this system of like taking only 10-15 people in a group and doing it a very interactive way of doing programs, asking questions and answers. And, you know, rather than a class, it's very interactive program.
Okay.
And that actually originally hooked me because I can ask questions, I can challenge, and I get. So that model went very deep. So then when I came to Sydney, as you know, my sister and my brother-in-law was not yet initiated at the time, but they were very serious devotees, were chanting Sutrinams, Mangalati, everything was going on. And they were very serious about preaching and all of that. So then I told them that my training that I had, and why don't we start a program? So very interesting, because Bhakti Vriksha, two things is very important. One is how you run the class. And equally important is how you follow up and create a relationship with those people.
Of course.
Many people just give a class and leave and go away.
Because they're not interested.
Correct. Whereas Bhakti Vriksha is about, you know, creating that family
bonds
and that relationship. So then we teamed up, me, my brother-in-law, my sister, we started a small Bhakti Vriksha. And the devotees became very serious in the group. And then we saw that it's working actually. When, you know, like I already had a lot of experience and they became hooked onto it. And then, so we started this program of running Bhakti Vrikshas across. So we, currently we have between us around 15 groups. Then later, like 2014, 15, Guru Maharaj came and One of the things that we always struggled with is, if we bring 15 or 16 devotees in a group, maybe 5-6 will turn into a senior's devotees. The rest 10, they are there, they are not there, and things like that. So then again, you know, when I was talking to my mentor, he said, along with the congregation ministry and Guru Maharaj's input, they have started a new program called Manjari, which is basically a lighter version of Bhakti Vriksha.
Okay.
Which is just, you go, there are three types of manjaris they had. One was called the Yoga Manjari, the other one was called Gita Manjari, the third one was called Tulsi Manjari. Basically what it is Tulsi Manjari is more for India, where they just do Tulsi Puja, read one story and go away. Yoga Manjari is where they do yoga and a little bit of kirtan, that's it, no philosophy. And Gita Manjari is just, they will talk a little bit of Gita, but no hard Krishna consciousness, right? Just like simple. A simple philosophical, you know, which day-to-day people can connect. So then we picked that up and we thought, and then the idea was bring that in, do that for like 6 months. If somebody becomes serious, then you bring them to Bhakti Vriksha. Otherwise, you know, you hit them with, you know, who is the soul and, you know, who is Krishna and all of that, it becomes very difficult. So then we started that pilot program here. And we saw that again, you know, Tulsi Manjari is not for Australians, no, like, you know, the puja aspect is more Indian housewife.
Worship in a tree.
Yeah. here actually the Gita Manjari worked, and the Yoga Manjari, I tried for Westerners, it worked a little bit. So we started running these Manjari programs. So that's Bhakti Vriksha and Manjari is what we do. I run like 4 Manjaris right now. And then we have almost 70, 80 people within that. And I also run a couple of Bhakti Vrikshas with 20, 30 people. So that's my, you know, current service. So we try to do the Manjari, make them really interested, then pull them into Bhakti Vriksha. So then we see that the conversion rate of them becoming devotees is much higher.
Right. Now, another question I want to ask you, how you connect yourself with the temple, with ISKCON as an organization? Because that is very important for people to understand.
So again, you know, this is a very important question, because again, being a congregation, if you don't go to the temple, there is a perception that you are creating your own group and things like that.
You are becoming a guru. You want to be independent. You are a demon.
Yeah. So one thing, again, you know, this is Guru Maharaj's suggestion, was take up some service as a group.
That's nice.
So what we started doing was back in 2015 to 2016, every month, 2 Sundays, our group will go and cook and clean the temple on Sunday feast.
That's nice.
And then,
how many people come Sunday feast?
400 people. Yep, 400 people.
That's a lot of people.
Correct. So that service we picked up, and then we will have some fixed services that we'll do in the temple, like certain festivals. We will do the whole cooking, serving, cleaning, and all of that. So, and then plus, you know, we engage people in different services. Like, we have one devotee who does all the purchase for the temple, like all, like 300 liters of oil. He has a big van, he puts in and, you know, serves. There's a devotee who prints everything because he has a printing shop, and, you know, like that, we connect to the temple.
Nice.
And then obviously we do whatever Lakshmi we can. One of the things we have set for our group is everybody, a portion of their salary have to go to the temple.
That's nice.
Most of them have connected to the temple through the deity seva.
Right.
And I am also, I mean, part of the leadership team. They call it the congregational leadership team.
Nice.
So I'm part of that. I'm helping with the preaching. Another service, as you know, I've taken up is leading the construction, because we are going to rebuild the ISKCON City.
Tell us a bit about the new future project of the temple, because people will be interested. This temple is small.
Yep.
I mean, 400-500 people cannot go inside the hall. Is maybe 100 people can go and stuff inside one.
Yeah, correct.
In front of the DD.
So how this project came about is, you know, we have a, you know, ISKCON Sydney is very, very unique in the sense the property is in the center of the town. It's in actually CBD, what's considered the business district. It's a very high valued property.
Okay.
So we have almost like 14,000 square feet of land. And out of that, the government wanted to take a strip, 2,000 square feet, for expanding the road. We fought them, but you can't really fight them, actually.
No, of course, it's the government.
Yeah. So then we went the other way around. There was a devotee, Govinda Hari, I was talking to, a very intelligent devotee. He had some inside connection, so he found what is the best rate they'll pay. So he negotiated, and he got for that small bit of piece, $2.2 million. Then we thought, okay, we have a $2.2 million. And this the property is actually, just to give you a background, it's 60 years old. It used to be a funeral home before it was a temple.
Amazing.
Yeah. So Radha Gopinath mercifully stays there. Then we thought, okay, this is not fit for purpose anymore. As you said, Janmashtami.
Huge.
It's like, you know, like 3,000 people. Cooking is difficult. Serving, darshan, everything was a problem.
Parking.
And the parking, and then neighbors complaining, so many issues. So we thought, let's renovate this project. So there was a devotee who was working on redesigning and everything and all of that. Because they had this idea that if you demolish and rebuild, they may not give a permission again for a temple because this is a central business district. So then some or other, I was part of, as a leadership committee, everybody was, you know, they said that one devotee alone can't work. So one devotee has to take one respect of it. So then they said, Narottam Prabhu, why don't you do the design part of it? I said, okay, only design is an intellectual, it's a simple service, I'll do it. And then when I took up the design and I saw the idea they had, then I already had some connection in developers because I supply marble and granite for a lot of developers here.
Nice.
So then I went to one of my developer friends and I asked, and he said, I'll tell you, I don't know about your project, but I'll tell you in development terms, rebuilding is always better than renovating. Then I took the idea back to the temple. They said, no, we may lose the place of worship. Then I again went to another friend who was a town planner. And I asked him this question. He said, no. He said, once that permission is given, it's for the land, not for the building. You never lose it. Then again, the temple was a little skeptic. And then we went and forth. Then I pitched this idea that if you rebuild, you can have parking. That kind of caught the committee's idea. Then they said, okay, let's do a rebuild. So then we hired a town planner. And then because this idea was mine, they said, you have to lead it.
Yeah.
I have an amazing two brahmacharis in the temple. Brilliant boys, Sriman Narasimha Prabhu and Kamsari Sena Prabhu, both engineers. They were toppers of their class, you know. They were toppers in the college. Then they were working in multi-corporations. They left the job and joined the temple. Now they have come into the project. And with them, along with me, we have now designed an 8-floor temple, 4 floors of parking. And then the first floor will be a function hall with
In the same place.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be a function hall with a full-fledged kitchen. First floor will be a big deity room with an altar made of marble, and then a mezzanine floor with artwork, preaching, theater, and all of that. And the top floor will be the Brahmacharya Ashram.
Nice.
So, very interestingly, you would be amazed because generally here in Australia, mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get a temple approved. So, we were very reluctant. So, I had designed the temple like a box actually originally. Yeah. And then I went to the council and they were actually very enthusiastic because they heard the term that we were the first Sydney, Australia. ISKCON is the first Hindu temple in Australia, whole of Australia.
Wow.
Okay.
This was established by Prabhupada.
Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. 1971.
Wow.
Okay. So when we went and when they heard this, they were super happy and they said, oh, we want to do really something. And then the lady who is in charge of the artwork and the heritage and all of that, when she saw the building, she was not happy. She said, this is not a temple. She's a Westerner, but this is not a temple. I said, what do you mean by that? She said, it looks like a box. You know, I wanted more, you know, express yourself. Yeah. Then I went back, we redesigned. What I did was, instead of putting it a box, I made a gopuram that protrudes from the wall.
Right.
And then I showed them and she said, no, this is not a temple. She said, put a full dome on top of how you design and I will even help you. If you go over the height limit, there is a special provision, you can do it. I was thinking, you know, who is the client? Who is the town planner here? So then we came back and we redesigned a fully functional normal temple with altar on top of Radha Gopinath that goes all the way to the top. And we have designed with sandstone carving, granite carving and everything. Now the council is happy. They have seen the design. So now we are working with all the consultants to get all the reports so that we can submit the development application.
Nice. One question is that wouldn't it have been better find another land somewhere which was bigger, would give you more facility for parking, more facility for expansion?
Yes.
Let's say if you buy 4-acre, 5-acre or...
Definitely.
I don't know because sometimes...
Yes,
but maybe the location is different.
So the we thought about it, but then we thought there is already a project that's coming in West, which is a 5-acre land, which is going to be very near where we are, where they are building what you are just describing, a big temple with all the facilities.
ISKCON. Oh, okay.
And we also have, as you know, the two farm communities nearby. Yes. There's Govinda Valley and then this Hunter Valley farm. Mm. So there is a lot of people who on the weekend go. But what was really missing was two things. One was people who work, go to office, they want to come to the temple. Right. And then we found that where the North Sydney ISKCON temple is, 20 kilometers south, 20 kilometers north, there is no Hindu temple at all. So for almost 40 kilometers, you don't have any Hindu temple except ISKCON.
So people will want to come here.
Correct. And, you know, there is no facility. So plus the third thing that we thought about was it would be a very good place to do Western preaching. Because one of the things that we want to do in ISKCON Sydney is not only preach to the Indian devotees. Indian devotees are amazing, no doubt about it. We are not differentiating ISKCON body. Yes. But then ISKCON itself is Bhashyatya Deshadharinam. Prabhupada is famous for making Western devotees and we are not doing that. So now there is a revival, you know, I run a couple of bhakti manjaris for Westerners. The temple is running a couple of programs for Westerners. So we think that North Sydney is a very strategic location for Westerners to come and connect.
Right.
So that is one of the reasons why you see we could have made the temple hall much bigger, but rather we wanted to go with multi-dimensional facilities like a theater, yoga room, a place to learn music.
Preach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the temple room is bigger than what it is now, but the focus is more on have more facilities. So that is what we are focusing on. So we think that it is a very strategic location to preach.
Of course.
And so that is why we are trying to do that as a better place.
Narottam Prabhu, let me ask you the last question. Is that Prabhupada said we can conquer Australia by prasadam. So what's your plan to, I don't know, is there any restaurant? Is there the world?
100% yes, Prabhu. I'm inspired by you. And no, definitely, I've seen the pizzeria that you have built in Mayapur. That's one of my dreams to do a pizzeria like that.
We can do it. It's doable.
Yes.
It's doable.
My ultimate aim is to come out of the, you know, like, yes, I work in a corporate, I make money, but I feel there is more satisfaction in this line of work. And I actually see that, like you were saying today morning, I actually see that it will make much more money. Let's leave alone Krishna conscious on one side.
Absolutely.
I can tell you that just money-wise, we would make a lot of money, right? One thing that I've just set up, which we are just going to start, is another devotee I've helped him set up, this dosa batter.
Mm.
So I've got the machine for him. I've got the machine to make oil for him.
Nice.
So I've set it up for him. So he is going to supply oil and dosa batter for the devotees first. And then
you can expand into
So that. My thought process is like what you said, right? But I want to do it in different aspects as well.
Sure.
Like one Italian shop, you know, and a specialized dosa batter, somebody can like sell certain items that, you know, like, you know, food items that you don't get outside. There are so much opportunities there. I know when Mataji, she's running a cake business, okay? You won't believe she charges $300-$400 a cake for birthdays. She makes all these different designs. And, you know, she's one of the devotees who helped yesterday Vyasa Puja cake.
Nice, beautiful.
So you see that. So I think that if we can combine all of this and make it as a one group, and along with that, if we can franchise like what you're saying.
Yeah. We could have a centralized kitchen and you have a 5-6 different places. You have one van to distribute the things. You just fry the burger or whatever. The
devotees can do a Krishna conscious job. Yes. They can make as much money as they are making in the outside world.
Absolutely.
And then ISKCON will get like a lot of contacts as well, you know, for preaching. What you say is true, Prabhu.
It's what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said we can conquer Australia by distributing prasadam.
Correct.
So who is stopping us? Nobody. We just have to figure out our brain.
Correct.
Do it. So I think you have come to the point that we can actually do it.
Yes.
And we have people who want to help us also.
Yeah, it's just that devotees have that ingrained fear or, you know, aversion to risk. But I think it's worth taking that risk. You know,
we have taken a risk for Krishna.
Krishna,
so
yes.
So Krishna is behind us. It's like we are crossing the road with the hand of the dead. So he's guiding us. So there is no fear.
Hopefully next time when we do a podcast in Radio Mayapur, we'll show what facilities we have.
Okay, fantastic.
You know, maybe you can come and build a pizzeria for us.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Naratantu Prabhu, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. This is a wonderful podcast. Do you have any parting message for the audience of Radio Mayapur?
Keep listening to Radio Mayapur. That's my first request.
Okay.
Because I really, every time I talk with Ganga Prabhu, this is my personal realization, he's very relatable. He doesn't talk in like, you know, philosophy, but what he talks is very sensible. So I'm really enjoy having his association. So keep listening to Radio Mayapur. And then my second request is enjoy all the Krishna conscious activities that you do. That's what I am doing here. You know, every time Prabhu comes, Maharaj comes, or, you know, we have a function. It's an amazing, amazing thing. So, yeah, enjoy your Krishna consciousness.
Susutam kartum avyayam, Krishna says. This Krishna consciousness is very joyfully performed. Right. So,
I really enjoy it. So, I hope everybody
me too. Me too. I think at one point, I think spiritual advancement, Srila Prabhupada said that if you are happy, that is a spiritual advancement, because you're chanting, you're connecting your heart. Apart from Radio Mayapur, connect your heart. You connect your heart with Krishna. And then Krishna is the source of all pleasure. So yeah, by being connected with him and performing activity in the mission of Lord Chaitanya,
yeah,
so we become very happy. Thank you so much.
Thank
once
you,
again.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Ja.
Natagodi Vaishnavrinda ki.
Ja.
Iskon Sitne ki. We want to see the temple built.
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you.
How many years?
Our target is 3.5 years.
Okay. So very soon we'll see it.
Yep.
Thank you once
Hare again. Krishna, Hare Prabhu. Krishna. Thank you. Wonderful service. Hare Krishna.
Hare Hare.
You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.